Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When Lily White, Iowa, put African-American Barack Obama at the top of the Democrats' Iowa caucuses, it felt for a moment like a brand new day in this country on race. In the 12 days since, it's felt like deja vu all over again. LBJ, MLK, and old civil rights history back in the headlines. Race out front. And Hillary Clinton and Obama locked in the political fight of their lives. This hour, On Point, the race factor in the Democrats' 08 campaign. Joining me today from Seattle is Randall Kennedy, professor of law at Harvard. He's one of the best-known thinkers and writers on race in America. He's just out with a new book called Sellout, The Politics of Racial Betrayal. Randall Kennedy, thanks very much for being here.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
With us from Chicago is Laura Washington, columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times and senior editor at the investigative magazine In These Times. Laura Washington, good to have you again as well. Welcome back.
Good to be here, Tom.
And from New York, David Greenberg, professor of history, journalism, and media studies at Rutgers University. David Greenberg, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Let's jump into, I don't know, maybe one of the first big rock in the pond. Last Monday, addressing the fact that Barack Obama is an eloquent speaker, but maybe not with her length of record, Hillary Clinton remarked on the role that Martin Luther King played in the 1960s and LBJ, too, securing civil rights laws.
Dr. King's dream began to be realized when President Lyndon Johnson passed the Civil Rights Act of 1964, when he was able to get through Congress something that President Kennedy was hopeful to do, President before had not even tried, but it took a president to get it done. That dream became a reality. The power of that dream became real in people's lives because we had a president who said, we're going to do it, and actually got it accomplished.
It took a president to get it done. On Election Day in New Hampshire, former President Bill Clinton, talking with students at Dartmouth, describing the Obama campaign. He was talking about Obama's record on the Iraq War, but here's the quote that gets replayed again and again.
Give me a break. This whole thing is the biggest fairy tale I've ever seen.
What's the biggest fairy tale? Everybody wants to know. What? Randall Kennedy, Laura Washington, David Greenberg. Since then, we've got all kinds of stuff that's been thrown out on the table, a direction that maybe nobody expected, or maybe they did. Laura Washington, first to you, what do you see going on here?
What's going on is the use of words and the interpretation of words in a very racially volatile country. Things haven't changed all that much. We still have difficult race relations. We still have a lot of undercurrents, stereotypical undercurrents when it comes to race. And so when folks make statements, they had to be very careful about how they're going to be interpreted. And different people interpret them differently. The fairy tale example, Bill Clinton says he was talking about Barack's position on the Iraq War and the issue of whether or not he has changed his position. A lot of people saw that as a slap, particularly African-American people saw it as a slap, the suggestion that Obama wasn't ready for prime time, that he was a joke. And so, again, the words can get interpreted depending on who's listening.
Randall Kennedy, did the Clinton campaign play the race card here or not?
No, I don't think they played the race card. And I should say straight up that I'm a Barack Obama supporter.
Okay.
But I do not think that the Clintons were playing the race card. I think they're campaigning for the presidency of the United States, and they were trying to make a point. I think it was, I don't agree with the point they were making, but no, they weren't playing the race card.
What do you think the point was? How did you interpret what was being said there?
Well, with respect to Hillary Clinton, I think that she was trying to say that it's one thing to be an idealist. It's another thing to get things done. The example that she used was a bad example, and it came out wrong, and she's back from it. And I think it was a bad example, too, but I don't think it was any sort of implicit effort to denigrate black people or denigrate Dr. King or anything like that.
David Greenberg, how do you interpret what's gone on, what's going on here around race? Both camps saying today, truce, let's stop this, let's stop, but it's kept kind of lurching forward. How do you interpret what we've seen in the last week, David?
Well, I agree with much of what's been said. I think this is not really about race, it's about politics. I think what happened was after Iowa, it became apparent that Obama's greatest support was with upscale whites. After New Hampshire, it was clear that Hillary Clinton was continuing to be strong with older women and lower-income whites, and that the black vote, which had been with Clinton, was now up for grabs because Obama seemed more electable. And I think there was a very deliberate push by the Obama camp, and there were memos going around outlining comments both by the Clintons that I think were pretty innocuous, like the Lyndon Johnson one, and then some very unfortunate remarks by some of their supporters that were, you know, less innocuous or at least badly phrased, and that these talking points were used as a way of saying, you know, we can't trust Hillary Clinton on racial issues. I think that put an end effectively to Barack Obama's promise of a post-racial politics. Race has crept back in, and I think now both sides very wisely are pulling back from the brink. They see that this can only be destructive for whichever candidate winds up the nominee. If Hillary Clinton's the nominee, she's going to need black support. If Barack Obama's the nominee, he's going to need to have something of that promise of transcending old fights, which he, you know, it's clear primary fights are ugly, and this is politics. So it's less about race coming in than political choices being made as who's going to get key voters.
Laura Washington, how about it? I mean, clearly the chips are really down here. It is of necessity a knife fight. I mean, everybody's future is on the line right now. Big polls coming out just yesterday indicating some of that African-American support, or a lot of it, may have been swinging to Obama. So the upscale white support tag, I don't know if that exactly fits anymore. But how do you see it, Laura? David says a very deliberate push by the Obama camp to kind of racialize the debate here. Do you see the Obama camp as the first mover?
I see. It's hard. I've lost track. Who knows who started it?
Yeah.
But it's certainly true that both campaigns are implicitly, if not overtly, talking about race. And in this campaign, both campaigns, when it comes to African-Americans, have very strong, vocal African-American supporters who are going to put their reputations on the line on issues related to these candidates' records. So you're going to get a Bob Johnson, for example, and this is one of the more offensive things that's been put out there. Bob Johnson, the founder of BET.
Just yesterday, first African-American billionaire in the country standing up for Hillary.
It was over the weekend, and he implied in a speech supporting Hillary Clinton that Barack Obama was just a community organizer from Chicago who, as he said in his book, had done some interesting things. What he was talking about was his drug use. He's trying to imply he wasn't. He's trying to suggest he wasn't, but that's exactly what he was talking about. On the Clinton side, you have things like Mr. Shaheen in New Hampshire and the comment he made that was related to Barack Obama's drug use. This didn't start with the last couple days. Race has always been a part of the discussion. When Barack Obama came out of Iowa, he came out a winner, and the first thing he said the next morning in New Hampshire was, "We're going to make history. We're going to move all the way to the presidency." That was the implication there, was I'm going to be the first black president of the United States. He put that on the table. When you put race on the table, you can't ever take it off. I think the other really interesting thing is that I can't believe that they're having this kind of discussion and pushing this kind of discussion in front of the South Carolina primary, where there is so much at stake, where you really have a major, significant black voting population. Half the voting population in South Carolina is African American, and both of them are playing with fire in terms of stirring up the pot when they start talking about race.
Here's the founder of Black Entertainment Television, Robert Johnson, in South Carolina on Sunday, speaking out about Barack Obama with the kind of dig you'll hear it at the end.
As an African American, I am frankly insulted that the Obama campaign would imply that we are so stupid that we would think Hillary and Bill Clinton, who have been deeply and emotionally involved in black issues, when Barack Obama was doing something in the neighborhood that I won't say what he was doing, but he said it in his book.
There it is. I won't say what he was doing. That dig at Obama's concession some time ago in book form of drug use when he was young. I don't know. Randall Kennedy, post-racial politics is over, David Greenberg says. Were we ever in it? Was it an illusion? Was it a little happy bubble that had everybody in a fantasy land?
Two things. First of all, the statement by Bob Johnson was just absolutely egregious. And
wink, wink, hint, hint. He says, that's not what I meant, but it's clearly what he meant.
It clearly was what he meant. And if the Clinton camp does not discipline him or distance him, themselves from him, they ought to be held to account for it. But secondly, on the question of race, of course, race is part of this. We have before us the first serious contender for the presidency who's an African-American. Barack Obama, unlike previous campaigners like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, Barack Obama is truly seeking to become president of the United States. Mm. He's not seeking to become president of Black America. Mm. He is seeking to become president of the United States. And one of the things that makes him attractive to many people is the fact that he speaks in a way which is racially inclusive. Mm-hmm. He speaks in a way that aspires for a transracial America. And I really do not think that he has been playing the race card. I think that often what happens is we have a black man running for president of the United States, and anything that happens, people attach, you know, racial significance to it. Even with respect to this question of the drugs, I mean, the drugs is the drugs. It's what's necessarily racial about it. I think that we're ascribing race to things which, you know, go have other sources.
And yet,
not everything that touches Barack Obama is racial.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about race and the Clinton-Obama contest. Laura Washington joins us from Chicago, columnist there at the Chicago Sun-Times. Randall Kennedy of Harvard Law School is here. His new book is Sellout, The Politics of Racial Betrayal. David Greenberg of Rutgers University is with us, joins us from New York. His piece in the Washington Post this week calls Obama the great white hope. Sheldon's calling from Columbia, South Carolina. That's where a lot of action's going. Sheldon, welcome. You're on the air.
Salutations. I think I'm more in agreement with Mr. Kennedy, you know, and not trying to slight, you know, Ms. Washington or Mr. Greenberg. But like you said, you know, Senator Obama's not running for, you know, president of Black America. He's running for president of the U.S. And myself, you know, I'm not what you would call a native of, you know, South Carolina. You know, I come from the outside. My dad did 31 years in the military, so... Mm. I bring a perspective of somebody that's been overseas as well as a lot of places, you know, in the United States. And I'm voting for Hillary Clinton, you know, even as African-American. But, like, you know...
Sheldon, why? May I just ask why?
Okay, like Mr. Kennedy's saying, race, even though race is going to play a part of it, particularly in the South, because, and I have to be up front and unabashedly say that there are white, you know, persons in South Carolina that will not vote for a black candidate and vice versa. There are black persons that will not vote for a white.
And but you're prepared to go right across that line and vote for Hillary? What's drawing you to her, Sheldon?
Well, because for one thing, you know, I've lived in New York, and it's really hard to convince a New Yorker, and I'm not from New York. You know, I was born out in the Midwest, McConnell's Air Force Base, Wichita, Kansas. But it's really hard to convince a person from New York. You know, it's even harder to get their support to elect you as two terms as a senator. And I look at that. Also, I like Bill Clinton. You know, as president,
yep,
in his office, he did a lot for the military, you know, and for me personally and all that. And I'm not looking so much as a Clinton dynasty continuing, because Bill Clinton has said that he's going to stay out of his wife's administration if Hillary should become president of the United States, which that's going to be my vote. It's going to be for her and all that.
We got it, Sheldon. We see where you stand, where you start, and where you stand, and we appreciate it. Let me get a call from Frank in Columbia, South Carolina. Frank, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. I'm Franklin Davis. I'm a native South Carolinian. I've lived here all my life. I educated here. I'm a young black man here, and I'm supporting Senator Obama. But with regards to this conversation about race and having a post-racial, president here, the thing that draws me to Senator Obama is that he can transcend that. Being here in Columbia, and
he can or cannot, Frank?
He can. Oh, he can transcend race.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what draws people. I'm 25. I'm young. You know, I sit with my friends. We talk. And the thing that we find is that there's almost this disconnect. A lot of older black people here, they feel they owe the Clintons something. whereas the younger black folks will say, well, you know, that could be me. You know, I'm 25, I'm 30. You know,
that Barack Obama, that man on the stage could be. Let me ask you, Franklin, if I may. David Greenberg writes that Obama has run as the great white hope. You're a young African-American. Do you see him running as a great white hope or somehow or running for you as a black man? Or
well,
both?
I think it's both. I've been to his rallies here in Columbia, and, you know, it's just as many white kids as black kids. It's almost like he's this Bobby Kennedy-esque kind of figure here, and people love him, and that's the draw. But when you look at this race between him and Senator Clinton, it's, I guess, de-evolved into this race. The race has evolved into race.
Well, we hope not, but we're looking at exactly what's happened there. Frank, thanks for your call. David Greenberg, what do you mean when you say he's run as the great white hope?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that, because it's less that he's running as the great white hope than I think a lot of his supporters who until now, and it's changing now as he's getting more black support,
yeah,
but previously blacks were more with Clinton. His appeal, I think, to a lot of upscale white liberals, it's not the Bobby Kennedy coalition, which was black and blue collar and black. It's you know, latte and black and latte, although I hate to use those slurs on liberals like myself. But Obama appeals to people, I think, because he promises a way out of these racial conundrums that have bedeviled us for our entire history as a people. And there's this, I think, an illusion that simply by pulling the lever for Obama, we will be delivered to a new America where these racial issues won't count. And it ignores the hard work of politics and policy that's going to have to be brought to bear on a whole host of problems that continue to afflict the poor and in particular black Americans, that although Obama certainly, I think, is aware of them and would deal with them, it's not what his white Iowa supporters are getting fired up about. What they're fired up about is the notion that this new face in the White House would somehow represent a turning of the page and wiping clean a lot of our problems. It's analogous to an argument my friend Andrew Sullivan's made about terrorism, that simply having a man with a Muslim father and a background in other parts of the world who lived in other parts of the world would somehow change America's posture in the world and make America's enemies abroad regard us less with less hostility.
All right, it's too easy, you say. Not that simple. It's going to take hard work. But yet, on the other hand, I mean, sometimes countries do turn a page. Sometimes cultures do begin to look at things in new ways. There must be some attraction in that as well. Laura Washington, let me ask you. David calls Barack Obama's candidacy at some level, quoting him, a fantasy of easy redemption. What do you say, Laura?
A fantasy is the key word there. Easy redemption from our racial
That's the suggestion. But is that all it is? A fantasy of easy redemption? Pull the lever for Barack and suddenly, you know, all the history is gone. Do you think that's what people are thinking?
Of course it's a fantasy. I mean, the reason why the fact we're having this discussion today shows what a fantasy it is. This country has many deep racial divides, and people make voting decisions, make political decisions, make policy decisions often based on interest groups, and some of those interest groups happen to be race. And Barack Obama is going to have to make some of those tough changes. You know, I think one of the reasons that he is getting so much pressure from the older African-American establishment that the caller referred to earlier is because he has refused to run as a black candidate, because he has refused to kowtow to the Al Sharptons who say, I'm not going to make up my mind about who I'm going to support till I find out what I'm going to get out of that person. Am I going to get some policies on the death penalty?
Piece?
Absolutely. So he is not succumbing to that kind of blackmail. And I think that white voters and black voters find that refreshing, and especially younger black voters who don't buy into the racial politics that the Jesse Jacksons, the Al Sharptons have been pushing for all these years.
Randall Kennedy, a fantasy of easy redemption. Does that not belittle Barack Obama? Is that all he represents?
No, I don't think it belittles him. I mean, it's a comment about some of the people who are supporting him. And if it's true that people view pulling the lever for Barack Obama as a panacea for all of our nation's ills, racial ills, then, you know, they are in a fantasy land. Of course, the election of Barack Obama won't magically get rid of all the difficulties that we face. It is important to note, though, that Barack Obama's candidacy is pretty remarkable. You know, in 1948, black people in South Carolina were formally and expressly and openly excluded
yep.
from voting in Democratic primaries. Yeah. 1948 is not that long ago. And here he is contending for the presidency of the United States in a quite serious way. So I think that I don't think it's a fantasy to see something remarkable about Barack Obama's ascendancy in the Democratic Party. I think that it does signal something quite important. It would be an error to put, too much into it, but that people are finding encouragement, that people are finding excitement, that people see the possibility of a black man as president of the United States as an important turning point in our history. I think that, frankly, that's realistic. And I can understand why people are excited by it,
New Hampshire,
by the prospect of it.
Yep, New Hampshire put Hillary Clinton out front, and let's go there. John is calling from Windham, New Hampshire. John, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm probably one of those upscale white liberals that have been referred to a couple times on the show here. And I did vote for Barack Obama, but I felt I really needed to call in here because everything that's just happened recently, I always put Barack above the whole racial element. I thought he was just a good, solid person that I wanted to have in there. He's
yep.
inspirational. But all of a sudden, when his campaign starts circulating memos about using the racial card, that really caused a sort of a crack in his porcelain mask in my eyes. And had that happened prior to the New Hampshire primaries, I never would have voted for him because in my eyes, that's one of the worst things that can be done. And I thought that was one of the best things about him is that he's a person, and he's running not black, not white. He's a person, and he's a very charismatic person.
Yep.
And that's what influenced me.
So up to right that point, but you say he played the card in response to Hillary Clinton's remarks. I want to ask about exactly, and thank you for your call, John. Laura Washington, I want to ask about exactly that. Hillary Clinton has said, repeatedly since she talked about Martin Luther King and LBJ, and by the way, it's Martin Luther King's birthday today, though the holiday's next week. Happy birthday, Dr. King.
Happy birthday.
But do you see the Martin Luther King, LBJ comment, Laura, as innocent as Hillary puts it forward? It took LBJ to get it done. A president to get it done is her phrase.
I think, as Randall Kennedy pointed out earlier, it was a poor choice of words. I don't think it was intentional. Hillary Clinton's far too smart of a politician to say something that would denigrate Martin Luther King at this point in the context.
Really? Even if she was in a down and dirty fight with
that's
Barack
not good. It's clear that it's backfiring on her among certain voters.
Mm-hmm.
So if that was if she was trying to gain some points, I don't think it worked. I think that every time she tries to compete for the black stuff with Barack Obama,
mm-hmm.
she's going to lose that conversation because she's not black. She is obviously done. Her and her husband have been very long time supporters of civil rights.
Yep.
Done many things in administrations. Have many huge support from elected officials and voters, and genuine deserved support. But she cannot be a black woman, and her husband was not the first African American president of the United States. So she just raises that question every time she brings up, and she also raises the question of authenticity. One of the biggest criticisms of Hillary Clinton has been that she's not truly authentic. That she's trying to be too many things for too many people, that she's trying to listen to the polls, that she's trying to appeal to interest groups. And that just reminds folks that this Hillary Clinton is not really the real thing. And then they turn to Barack Obama and they see, if you're looking at an African-American candidate who can transcend race, you're looking at the real thing.
David,
may I chime in,
yes,
Tom,
please.
On the history as a historian? I think it's fascinating how that comment, which really strikes me as very innocuous, got racialized, and I don't quite know where that started, but the distinction she's trying to make there, she was moving from this change versus experience frame, which
mm-hmm.
wasn't working for her.
No, it wasn't.
They're not opposites after
mm-hmm.
all. To talker versus doer, and King was obviously a lot more than a talker, but she was trying to drive home, I think, a very valid point. You need a president who knows how to get things done. And Martin Luther King, in fact, himself, praised Lyndon Johnson for having the indispensable or even unique skills to get the civil rights and the voting rights bills enacted. There's a whole complicated legislative history of how it was bottled up by Southern white congressmen and senators. You needed to get it out of committee.
Right, but to frame it just that way, after all the years in which Martin Luther King had been out in the streets building the scaffolding that let it happen, I still wonder. Randall Kennedy, let me ask you on that point. I understand it's hard to discuss things in these terms. And Hillary Clinton, as David said, wanted to draw a distinction, wanted to say, yes, he's inspiring, but I'm the doer. He's the talker, I'm the doer. But, I mean, race stands in our history. You know, there was a sense in which it sounded a little bit like, you know, hey, black guys are good dancers or singers, but white gals get it done.
No, I think that's a very tendentious way of looking at it. Just like your other guest, Laura, mentioned just a moment ago, what would have been the payoff for Hillary Clinton to have said that? She's getting ready to
face. But she didn't say that. She put it in different terms. She put it up in just history terms.
That's right. But, I mean, again, there was no payoff. There was no intention on her part. I think that she was losing.
She was losing to Barack Obama and people saying he can turn the page. He's so charismatic. He can turn the whole country. She needed a powerful way to say, no, he can't get it done. I can get it done.
That's right. That's what she was trying to say. And then because she used Lyndon Johnson and Martin Luther King to try to make her point, people have suggested that there was some racial subtext. And all I'm saying is there was no racial subtext. She was simply trying to say, I'm a person who can get it done. Let me say, Tom, with respect to the earlier caller, the caller from New Hampshire, who said that, you know, he would not have voted for Barack Obama because in the aftermath of this controversy, mm-hmm. because he thinks that Barack Obama was playing the race card. I don't think that is so. The issue arises, then people ask Barack Obama about it. It seems to me that Barack Obama has been quite loath to play the race card. Just yesterday, he's quoted as saying, I think that Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton have historically and consistently been on the right side of civil rights issues.
Yes, he did. Yep.
Barack Obama does not have to beat the drum. Anybody who looks at him can see that he is black. He doesn't have to try to accentuate the race issue. In fact, every time the race issue comes up, it's going to hurt Barack Obama. And in fact, I think that some people who are against Barack Obama are going to continue to try to racialize things because they know that the more they talk about it, the more it, no pun intended, blackens him.
And that hurts, I guess. Laura, you know, on the other hand, critics have said, well, he knows who he is. He knows just by standing there, race is on the table. And he kind of kept Hillary at arm's length from a whole raft of criticism she might launch because anything she said could be racially interpreted. And so she was sort of paralyzed until she stepped up and broke the dam a little bit.
Right. Well, and I think Randall Kennedy's point is well taken about what Barack Obama said yesterday about the civil rights history of the Clintons. But the Clintons have backed off of this, too, because I think both sides realize what a dangerous game they're playing. The issue is not whether or not she intended harm. She intended to denigrate King. It's the way things get turned around in a political campaign, in a heated political discussion. There's folks out there, enemies of hers, who black and white, who want to use that against her. There's enemies of Barack Obama who want to use the fact that his campaign sent around a memo. So these things, once they're in the public arena, once they get talked about, they get used as weapons, political weapons against each side. And it's nothing you can do to take that information back, whether or not you started it, whether or not it's something that's part of your campaign strategy. It's there and it's going to be used.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about race, alas, and the Clinton-Obama contest. Randall Kennedy is with us, professor at Harvard Law School, author of the new book Sellout, The Politics of Racial Betrayal. Laura Washington's here from Chicago, columnist with the Chicago Sun-Times, and David Greenberg from Rutgers. He's at work on a book about the history of spin in 20th century presidential politics. Sunday morning, Hillary Clinton on Meet the Press with Tim Russert. She rejected the suggestion that she had been critical of Martin Luther King.
Does he deserve the lion's share of the credit for moving our country and moving our political process? Yes, he does. But he also had partners who were in the political system. And I think it is such an unfair and unwarranted attempt to, you know, misinterpret and mischaracterize what I've said.
Yesterday, everybody trying to tamp down the racial conversation can't be good for the Democrats, was the new message. Barack Obama said, came out at a news conference saying the Clintons had a proven track record of supporting civil rights, calling for a truce.
I think that Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton have historically and consistently been on the right side of civil rights issues. I think that they care about the African-American community, and they care about all Americans, and they want to see equal rights and equal justice in this country. That is something that I'm convinced of, and I want to make sure that the American people understand that that's my assessment.
Barack Obama, yesterday. Let's get a call from John in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking a call from a longtime registered Republican.
Okay. Good to have you.
I'm interested in Barack Obama, and for the first time, I actually might cross over. But the reason for my call is to say that I agree with most of your guests in that I really think that this is being sensationalized by and large by the press, that surrogates notwithstanding, that Hillary Clinton's side nor Barack Obama's side benefits by any sort of racializing the campaign. Though it was a poor choice of words, I don't think it was intended by Bill Clinton that in any way, shape, or form racial. I think it was just, as another one of your panelists or guests said, that he was trying to portray her as a doer where Barack maybe is just a talker or something like that. But the whole racial thing has been blown way out of proportion, and unfortunately, I think it just speaks to our generation of sensationalism and tabloid journalism. It sells papers. It makes us listen to, you know, no offense, but radio shows and everything else. And I'm really distraught. I really hope that this can get put down and stop talking about, because it's ridiculous. You have so many more important things to talk about.
John, I hear you, and I sympathize. I mean, I have to say that this was not a conversation I was eager to have. And yet, Laura Washington, in a campaign season, a lot of things don't happen by accident, and the drumbeat, the drip-drip just kept on. Do you think this is sensationalized by the press? Or if we go upstream from there, did one campaign, both campaigns, know exactly how it would be received in the press and, you know, so sort of engineered that? How do you look at it?
News coverage is crucial to a presidential campaign. It's the mother's milk of politics in a presidential campaign. Both of these campaigns are heavily dependent and heavily tied into media coverage. So if the media is out there covering it, they're not making these stories up. They're not making these quotes up. They're not making these speeches up. This is information that's out there that in many cases the candidates are putting out there. I've written about this several times and again, race didn't just start to be a part of this discussion in the last week. It's always been out there. Every time I write about this, I get a lot of folks, voters responding yay and nay on whether or not it is an issue. But people are talking about it, and people, and I think the media coverage is simply reflecting that.
But when the so-called surrogates make their statements, mm-hmm. whether it's Shaheen or Mark Penn, the chief strategist there, or the billionaire founder of Black Entertainment Television, do you see that as accidental?
You got it. Well, accidental on whose part? You've got to cover it. Again, some of these folks
accidental
said
that it happened in the first place, or this is orchestrated campaigning. This isn't beanbag. This is high-stakes presidential campaigning.
I think that in many cases it's accidental in the sense that surrogates often misspeak and get a little bit too earnest and get past their own campaigns. In the case of Mr. Shaheen in New Hampshire, he was let go of the campaign. In many other cases, the campaigns have disavowed these statements. And I think they've disavowed them because they understand how dangerous they are. But the statements are getting made. And once they're out in the public arena, it's not it's unfair to say that the media is sensationalizing them simply because they're reporting them.
Randall Kennedy, are you willing to give the Clinton campaign the sort of, oops, we didn't mean any of this to turn into a racially tinged conversation? Are you willing to give them that posture?
I think that the caller was absolutely correct, that there's been a tremendous amount of sensationalizing. And second of all, as I stated before, yeah, I don't think that the Clintons meant what has been attributed to them. They were wrong in the substance of what they were trying to say. And I think that they used bad examples. But no, I don't think that this was orchestrated. I don't think that they were trying to use any sort of code to push any sort of racial buttons.
Let's go to Mark in Columbia, South Carolina. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
My comment is primarily that I really think the Clintons are starting to turn around on them what they've been putting out. Ever since New Hampshire, the Clintons started coming out attacking Obama and attacking the other candidates, and unfortunately, it's starting to backfire on them. Now, I don't think that Bill or Hillary Clinton are, you know, racist in any way, but I do think that they lowered the bar of the campaign when they started coming out on attack. And for somebody like Bob Johnson, who's not very liked among the black community anyway, with his lowbrow network to come out and make comments like that, I just find it, you know, as an African-American man, I just find it, you know, disgusting to hear him make something like that. And now Charlie Rangel is coming out making mm-hmm. comments about Barack Obama. And I really think, you know, the surrogates are really pushing this thing more, and the media is really jumping on it. But, you know, the Clintons have to take some responsibility for it also.
Mark, thanks for that. Laura Washington, what about the conversation within the black community that has ensued, that has developed in this last week? Is there a new school, old school divide here, or something else?
Yes, there is, and that's been discussed earlier. There's the old school, is the civil rights folks, the folks who come, who the John Lewis's, the Charlie Rangels, the Bob Johnson.
John Lewis saying he's no Martin Luther King in
absolutely,
in reference to
Obama. And he's been a very strong spokesperson for the Clintons, and then a younger generation that we've heard from today. There has been said before a huge disconnect there, and I think that. The Clintons have to be concerned about their old school black support, because I think in many ways those folks may be out of step both with the younger voters, but also with callers like the one you just heard from, and folks who feel that you know, this guy is a black guy, he's for real. The Clintons aside, I don't want to see him denigrated. I don't want to see him disrespected, and the tide could turn against them. Even for people who've been long-term Clinton supporters who feel enough is enough, after all, who's the real authentic black candidate here?
How do you, Laura, interpret what looks like a very large swing of black support from Hillary Clinton to Barack Obama just in the last week?
I think that's due largely to that many black voters are really just becoming aware of him in a meaningful way. They were heartened, I think, by the votes in Iowa, and even his strong showing in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
The people who believed that it was not possible to elect an African-American, that the country was not ready, are now starting to say, hey, maybe we can do this. So I think it's a combination of high, much higher awareness of Barack Obama, who he is, what he stands for, and this sort of hopefulness, a different kind of hopefulness than you saw coming out of Iowa, that, yes, we can do this.
Let's go to Elizabeth in Braintree, Massachusetts. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm just really frustrated that this whole discussion is taking place, because when I talk to other people about Barack Obama, they want to know about his policies, they want to know what he's going to do in Iraq, about what his experience is, all that sort of thing, and they don't care what race he is. And I think how well he did in Iowa and New Hampshire and how well he is now doing nationwide shows that Americans, generally speaking, don't care by and large. And I think that political pundits tend to vastly exaggerate how important this issue is. And I think the only point Hillary Clinton was trying to make with the Martin Luther King comment was the point she's tried to make all along about Barack Obama, which is that he's all rhetoric, and rhetoric just isn't enough.
But did you or do you, Elizabeth, see in Barack Obama's candidacy the potential for a kind of redemptive vote, that a vote for Barack Obama could in itself help move the country out of some of its old racial baggage, move it forward in a significant way? Have you seen him that way?
I think the fact that people are ready to vote for him, whether or not he wins, shows how far America has come. I don't think we're completely past race. And even if Barack Obama is elected president, I still don't think that means we're completely past race. But I don't think that it is as big of a deal as people tend to make it out to be.
Elizabeth, thanks for that. David Greenberg, I want to come back to this issue, as you put it, of the easy redemption, or just the redemption that Obama might represent. Are you so sure that that's wrong, that that's a fantasy? Is it really programs that are going to change this country culturally? Or, you know, could someone, a charismatic African-American president, in and of that characteristic itself, really be something important for the country?
Oh, I certainly think it's important. But what's it going to do for regarding the obscene percentage of the black male population that's incarcerated.
Maybe it's going to say to a whole lot of young black men, you can do it. This guy did.
Well, I don't think that solves the prison problem for you. What's it going to do about the discrepancy in life expectancy rates between black and white? I think there are a lot of
– Maybe it's going to say to a doctor in a hospital, treat that black man. The president's black.
Well, but I don't think it – see, I think it doesn't come – I think many of our racial problems, and here I've been very influenced by Randy Kennedy, are not results of – personal prejudice, although that certainly continues more than we'd like to admit. They're the results of kind of deeply ingrained sociological structures, cultural structures that are going to take generations and lots of hard policy work and lots of hard politics from the White House and Congress and at the state level to uproot. And although I certainly think there is value in symbols, I mean, I've written a lot about this, that we tend to denigrate symbolic politics. And I'm not denigrating the symbolic role, but it does seem to me, I mean, here's an example. Obama's speech when he won in Iowa was not, if you compare it to John Edwards' speech, which was really kind of talking about these are the particular policy issues I'm putting front and center,
yep.
Obama was doing something different in that Iowa speech, which, you know, I think was a good speech in a lot of ways, and I see what he was doing. But I think it would have sent a very different signal if he had ticked off a list of important problems that either are explicitly or kind of implicitly racial in character that the next president should at long last address. I don't think that's the kind of campaign he's running, at least right now. I don't think it's what motivates most of his supporters, at least so far. It's not to denigrate the symbolic or the rhetoric, but it's to say that hard policy choices are really what we're going to need, and that the conversation needs to shift to looking at which candidate is going to do a better job in those regards.
Well, that's exactly what Hillary Clinton says. Randall Kennedy, you've planted your flag. You've said so right here. You're for Obama. Open the kimono on that a little bit. How do you see the Obama candidacy, your hope for an Obama presidency? Important, most important in issue and policy terms, most important in symbolic and inspirational or transformational terms. How do you weigh that, Randy Kennedy?
In terms of, policy, especially domestic policy, I don't think there's going to be a huge difference between Obama and Clinton. In foreign policy, I think the judgments would be different. The reason why I'm for Barack Obama is because I think that he really is – he has a Kennedy-esque aura about him. He is a person who is – he really is a breath of fresh air, and I think there's something authentic about it. I think that he has eschewed certain features of old politics – and that he does represent a hope for something quite new and something quite hopeful and something that can lead us to higher ground. He thinks he can lead us to higher ground, and I think that he can.
But Hillary kind of says fiddlesticks. It takes hard work, she says again and again. She's even used the phrase false hope in reference to Barack Obama. What about that, Randall Kennedy?
In terms of hard work, here's a guy who went to Harvard Law School, was president of the Harvard Law Review, goes back to Chicago and engages at the local level in community organizing and then at the local level in local politics. Chicago politics is pretty hard, hardball politics. He is a fellow who has shown that he was willing to get down in very unglamorous local politics to help people day by day. And I don't think that aspect of his background has been given enough credit. He's a guy who – I'm sorry?
No, go ahead, Randall. I wanted to pick up on what you said before.
No, so I mean I think that this is a fellow who has shown that he really not only wants to but is very capable of engaging in the hard, unglamorous work of politics on behalf of people in general. I think that's why people are really excited by him and ought to be excited by him.
Laura Washington, we've just got a minute here. You're in Chicago. You've watched Barack Obama there. How do you expect him to take this on board, the sort of racialized moment here? Can he put it behind him? Does he have the grit to work through it? Does he have the moves?
I think one of the things he has done successfully is not only transcend race, but transcend this kind of bickering politics. And I think he's going to be very smart about making sure he pushes that out the door. I think Randall Kennedy is right, is that he, without getting into the nitty-gritty details of policy, he opens doors, he opens minds, he changes conversations, and that's quite an accomplishment. But he is also a policy wonk, as he points out. He's a politician tried and true, in a community organizer, but he's also a policy wonk. And you better believe that once he gets, if he gets to the nomination or gets close to the nomination, he's going to start talking about issues and policy. He doesn't expect to skate all the way to the White House without talking about substantive issues, but he's got a strategy that's working for him right now, this change strategy, this hope strategy, and he's going to ride that to as far as he can, and then you're going to hear a lot of substance from him.
Well, we're going to see more votes, and we're going to see them very quickly. This conversation may be deep in our rearview mirror or may stay with us for the rest of the campaign, but I really appreciate the way you've all opened it up for us. Thank you so much for being with us today. Laura Washington with the Chicago Sun-Times, always great to hear from you. Laura, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Randall Kennedy, old friend, the new book is Sell Out, The Politics of Racial Betrayal. Randall Kennedy at Harvard Law School, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
And David Greenberg at Rutgers. Mr. Greenberg, thanks for joining us.
Very much. My pleasure. Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.